This is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Treason is trending. It's been a while since I've podcasted or written anything of any substance, and I think I should probably explain why. In a nutshell, my life has changed, and my attitude has changed. I've done enough thinking and speaking and writing to understand, I think, all of the basics, all of the things that I used to wonder why these things are the way they are. I've pretty much figured it out. And I'm not all that interested in just repeating myself and speaking for the sake of speaking, so I don't. I've remained active on Twitter, where basically the process is reviewing the news that is highlighted by other people, the trends in current events. And I make brief comments on those things and tying it usually into some of the insights that I've talked about many times in longer form over the past several years. So there's really, I feel very little need to write long essays or do podcasts of research, detailed research on things. There's plenty more subjects that I'm interested in delving into, but I don't expect that I'll be all that much more educated by that work, and I don't think I would be convincing very many more people if they're not already convinced by the kinds of arguments and analysis that I've already provided. So I don't. And I've also got other things going on in my life. My job, that what I actually do for a living to pay my bills, I've poured more of myself into that. But there are a few things that I wanted to talk about besides this explanation for why I've been mostly silent for the last few months. And it amounts to two of the largest trends in current events. The first is the invasion of Europe. And I spoke about this back in the spring of this year when I saw it was in the context of this pathological altruism that European leaders are cat ladies and they're inviting aliens into Europe. And, you know, I made my points about that it's not cat ladies and it's not a cat lady mentality that actually rules. It's a worship of Jews, and it's a this idea of whites being bad, basically, and non-whites being good is the morality, the rationality behind the idea that Europe has to throw open its borders and allow anyone who wants to come. And that, the point I made in the I forget the title of it, but I'll link it in the post, the Traitors and the Invasion and Traitors and Jews podcast, is that's the dynamic, is that it's treason, and that it's treason at the behest of and with the thinking of the Jews behind it. The Jews being the first invaders of Europe, really. And as I've pointed out many times, that you can see that it's a moral argument, that this is what appeals to Europeans and the European mind, is this universal argument that everybody is us and that it's hate or intolerance to exclude anyone. And at the same time, it's doublethink, because the whole idea is that it's a distinction that is being made. It's between whites and non-whites, between Europeans and non-Europeans, that the non-Europeans are better than Europeans, morally better, and need to be served. And again, it's the Jews who are the first and foremost non-Europeans whose interests need to be served. And the latest trend, this is becoming mainstream, this invasion of Europe by non-Europeans is becoming so obvious and the characteristics of it are so obvious that it has gone mainstream. It's going viral right now, in part because they're coming now by the tens of thousands, and we're hearing that Germany, for instance, will be accepting 800,000 refugees. This is all under the latest push here, the viral aspect of it is being called the refugee crisis. Or on Twitter, it's hashtag refugee crisis. The real crisis is for Europe and Europeans, of course. It's not for the refugees, and these aren't even refugees. They're just people who want to come to Europe to find a better life for themselves. And the better life for Europeans be damned. They want to take what Europeans have, and it's mostly military age men that are coming. It's not families, despite the Jews media propaganda to the opposite effect that it's these poor people from war-torn countries that have to come to Europe to find their better life. There's plenty of countries nearby, even if they did do this to escape fighting, there's plenty of countries nearby that don't have any fighting going on, that have people that are much closer to them culturally and racially. And the irony, the really educational telling part of why they don't go there is that they actually say that first of all, they're not welcome by the governments of those countries, and secondly, that those governments say that they're not welcome because they're too different, they're too incompatible, and they would cause too much trouble. So, this goes back to the morality of Europeans imposed by Jews, the Jewish narrative, that it's Europeans' duty to take in everyone, no matter how alien, and to exclude anyone is just stupid, crazy, and evil. And now that I've brought up stupid, crazy, evil, that was one of the earliest podcasts I made. I thought it's one of the most valuable insights that I had into how things work, the actual mechanics of the political discourse and the psychological manipulation that goes on to enable, or at least to justify and rationalize what's happening. And that is, people use these arguments and attacks that are based on the idea that the enemy is stupid, or they're crazy, or they're evil. And the enemy in this case being any European, any white person who stands up and says, hey, what's happening isn't good for me, and tries to argue from the basis of what's good for themselves, not only as an individual, which is more and more becoming also taboo and not allowed for anyone who has white skin to even argue from an individual point of view, is becoming something that's stupid and crazy and evil today. But the first thing that they eliminated was white people standing up as white people, as a group, and saying, for my group, in the interests of my group, and they don't even have to identify themselves as white, they just have white skin and happen to be in a country and be speaking about a group of people who are mostly white, and say, it's not in my interest to let these hostile aliens in, or even intelligent aliens in, because, or poor aliens in, because they're aliens. That's really the basis of it. And you can see that argument being made by non-whites, and it's considered perfectly legitimate for non-whites to argue on that basis, that they don't even want to let smart people into their country if they don't, and they don't have to, because it's not good for them, and it's up to them to decide what is or isn't good for them. And the fundamental problem that we have in the West, in white countries, in the countries that were founded and created, built by white people, and are still mostly populated by white people, is that it's the Jews who decide what is good and what is bad. And they decide that based on what's good or bad for themselves, not what's good or bad for the vast majority of the population that they rule over. I've talked about that too. I've talked about the nature of Jewish rule, the double thing going on there, that Jews in fact rule. They're worshipped by, and openly so, by the leaders of these white countries, and whether they're white or not. Barack Obama is a good example of this, where he goes on and on about just how much he identifies with and loves the Jews to the point of worship. Joe Biden, his vice president, is another good example. But it's true also in the European countries, where supposedly the Jews can't possibly have influence because there's just not enough of them. It really doesn't matter how many Jews are present physically in a country. That's not what it takes for a country to be ruled by Jews. If that country decides its policies based on thinking of what's best for the Jews, that's enough for Jew rule. You know, we can, and I've just explained what I mean when I say Jew rule. It doesn't mean a Jew is actually the president of the country, because the president of the country, you know, let's be honest, isn't all powerful anyway. So even you can't say that Obama rules the United States, because Obama does what he feels he has to do in order to stay alive and in order to please the people around him that he feels he needs to please, and for his own personal ambition as well, for his own personal interest and the interest of his family narrowly. And this is the point I've made too about why white politicians do what they do. They do it out of self-interest, really, out of concern for themselves narrowly. And the rhetoric that they use to explain what they do is this universalist, we're all equal, we're all humans, no human is illegal, and by the way, the Holocaust. You know, we have to do this because otherwise it'll be like gassing all the Jews, loading them onto boxcars and so forth, all this imagery of the Jews. And that's what's behind that universalist narrative, is the Jews prodding you to either think of yourself as an atom and think only of your narrow self-interest, or to think of yourself as a human being and everyone is equal to you. And they are the best example of a group that doesn't see the world that way. They see themselves as part of a collective called Jews, and if that collective is attacked in any way, they do whatever they can as a Jew to deflect or thwart that attack and to counterattack. I mean, part of the reason for what they call anti-Semitism, it's really anti-parasitism. It's the host peoples around them whom they're infiltrating and manipulating and exploiting, reacting without, in most cases, without even really realizing that it's Jews as an organized entity, as a conscious entity, doing this to them. The host is, for the most part, unconscious, certainly relative to the Jews, unconscious and disorganized. But even just the cow shrugging its shoulders while a vampire bat sucks its blood, you can imagine the Jews, in this case, or the vampire bat, screeching about anti-Baptism, anti-blood-sucking. You know, that's basically what they're doing. And the cow is stupid, basically, and unaware that this is what's happening to them. They're simply shrugging in response to it, reacting. And if we ever want to free ourselves from this, we've got to recognize what it actually is and organize against it as well as or better than the parasite organizes. So that's the invasion of Europe, and you know, other people are talking about it, and part of the reason I don't feel any need to talk about it is because other people are doing a fairly good job, and it's shocking. It's reaching the mainstream. I think there's images on both sides. There's the image of the little Syrian boy who drowned that's supposedly invoking so much sympathy, but at the same time, there are images that are more representative of what's actually happening, of hordes of young men flooding into Europe, and young alien men, and crying out the name of the country that they came from, or crying out Allahu Akbar. So they make their hostility to Europeans obvious. The problem, and if I haven't already made it clear, the problem and the reason for the invasion is that Europeans don't think that they have any moral right to keep out the invasion. They don't even think of the invaders as invaders for the most part. But that is one of the trends that's changing. It's happening now so quickly that they see that this is a bogus, fraudulent argument, and that this is, it doesn't make any sense that their governments are not defending them, which is their number one job, and they are instead seeking to advance the interests of these hostile aliens. And more and more people are who otherwise were busy just living their lives are at this moment right now waking up and saying, why is this going on? And they're going onto the internet, and that's the only place you can find for the most part an explanation of what's going on, because if you go to the Jews media, you're only going to get sob stories and emotional and poisonous moral messages about how this has to happen because it's, first the explanation was because it's going to enrich us, and now the explanation has turned 180 degrees that it's our duty to enrich the aliens. So, in either case, it's a bogus argument, and it's not the real reason why it's happening. The real reason it's happening is that the Jews, either as themselves or their money, by proxy, their people who wish to serve their interests, are in charge, and they're the ones who are pulling the strings and writing the laws and interpreting the laws, and that's why our militaries, which aren't our militaries, are not repelling this invasion. The Jewish rule is enabled by treason, and it's, none dare call it treason because it's successful, because that's who's in charge. That's who's giving the orders to the military now is the enemy. And it was really the reason why the gates have been thrown open to the aliens is because aliens were already inside the gate, and they've been there for 2,000 years at least, and now they rule. They dominate the imaginations and the very morals of European societies, or formerly European societies, even in Europe. So the other major trend I wanted to talk a little bit about is the U.S. election cycle and Donald Trump in particular and what he's doing to it. I'm not usually interested in U.S. politics. As a young man, I used to show more interest until I got disgusted, not even understanding why. But I could see that basically it was a lot of nonsense and finger-pointing and food fight and all of that. I've come to understand, of course, that that's deliberate, it's a show, basically, a sideshow, to keep people distracted, keep people busy pointing fingers, to keep them divided into left and right and red and blue, liberal, conservative, and to just keep them thinking that the other side, politically, ideologically, is the enemy. And the larger purpose is to think that that ideology is the main division amongst people, and that that's the only proper division amongst people. And so whether you adhere to a leftist ideology or a rightist ideology, you think it's all about ideology, whereas the reality is that it's racial. That's what's really the most important, is your heritage and your people. And the Jews obviously recognize this, because whether they're playing the left side of the game or the right side of the game, the Jews themselves, they don't identify themselves as Jews. They don't identify their supposed enemy on the other side as a Jew. And yet they are, when it comes down to issues that are key to the Jews and what's best for the Jews, things like immigration, things like the defense of Israel, things like the morality of letting complete aliens run roughshod over you, then they are fairly united on that. And they often defend themselves from such criticism by saying, well, two Jews, three opinions. But it always comes down to two Jews, three opinions about what's best for the Jews. That's what's underneath it all. And they're just trying to distract from that. They use a variety of techniques to distract from the fact that they are operating as a monolith at the base of it all, as Jews. And they disagree about how to go about that. And so some of them line up on the left, and some of them, a smaller number, line up on the right, and make their arguments from those points of view. But Donald Trump is the big thing in the news, and Twitter is almost every day is at least the part of Twitter that I'm paying attention to. There's something or other that Donald Trump does every day that shakes up previous precedents and seems so out of the ordinary that it's shaking people's minds loose. So in a sense, that's one good aspect of what's happening. But then again, these are dangerous times. The change that's coming, as we see in Europe and the invasion, it's really getting to be the end game. Now, how white people and Europeans react at this point is going to be key. And unfortunately, the demoralizing and negative aspect of what's happening with Trump is just as large as prominent as the positive, potential positive aspects. So it's really comes down to whether you want to look at things optimistically or pessimistically about what's going on with Trump. But from my point of view, one of the most optimistic things I could say about it is that he's shaking up and exposing the two-faced, one-party political system. He's a representative of it, ironically, and a lot of people don't get that he's actually a part of the system, an inherent or an integral part. He's presented as an outsider, and people think because he's causing so much agita to the Jews media that this means that he's our friend and that he's going to save us or even help us a little bit, even if only unintentionally, because everybody seems to know that he's not actually a white nationalist, although that's what the Jews media is very intent to talk about. And that's one of the good aspects of what he's done, is he's put this whole issue of white interests and white people on the front page of all of the Jews media right now. It's all negative. It's all about how white people don't have interests, how stupid and crazy and evil it is to even think that white people have collective interests as a people. But that is exactly what causes people's minds to snap and to realize that this is a fraud. This is all of this stuff about democracy, and they see the ethnic activism of the Browns and the Blacks and the Jews and the Asians. All of these groups are actively organizing and lobbying for their people's interests as a people. And white people are just supposed to sit back and help them. That's what is making lots of white minds right now snap and go, I'm not a racist, but this is not right. Even if by my objective understanding of what's supposed to be happening here, that if racism is supposed to be bad, then all of these non-white groups that are organized racially should be bad, right? And this is coming out in the debate about Donald Trump, which is happening on the right, that the elite of the right is criticizing, one of their main criticisms is the rise of white identity politics. And the insight that I could make there is that it has to be qualified with the word white. And the reason for that is that identity politics is inherently anti-white. If you look into, as I did in one of my early podcasts, the roots of identity politics, what does that mean? You find that what it means is exactly what is driving objective white people who don't want to be racist crazy, which is the whole idea is that everybody but white people should organize along identity lines, along their racial, ethnic, cultural group interests. And that basically it's identity politics, to put it in a nutshell, is people of color against whites. It's an inherently, by definition, anti-white. People of color just means non-white, everybody who is not white, and the coalition is led by Jews. The problem that whites have, and what's being exposed by Donald Trump and all of this anti-white nationalist, anti-white media now coming out, even from the right side, it's always been coming out from the left, or has been for decades, but now it's even coming out on the right, is that they're just as anti-white as the left is. What's being exposed is that this idea of identity politics is anti-white, and the whole idea of whites trying to play the game, like just like any of the other identities, makes heads explode. It causes cognitive dissonance, and that's the reason for it, is that it's inherently anti-white. So whites deciding to play, it's like the word racism. You know, whites hear the word racism, and for the most part, they think it's some objective definition that it means just one race of people discriminating against another people of race based on race. That's what they think racism means. And they don't understand that, no, what racism is, and anti-racism, it comes out in that slogan, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. That's true, because if you look at all of the people who are organizing and railing against racism, quote-unquote racism, it's always aimed at white people. It's always a critique of white people, to the point where a racist is really just a code word for white people. And that's why when you hear white people talk about it, even they, at some level in their brain, realize this, and they'll say things like anti-white racism. They realize that they have to qualify the word racism, because if you just look at how the word is used, it's always in an anti-white context, or almost always. The only people who don't use it in an anti-white context are the white people who don't realize, who are thinking objectively, and don't realize that the term was created as an attack against white people. And what is it an attack against? It's against white. It's trying to discourage white people from thinking in terms of race, from thinking of, in terms of, as I said, the real driving force behind all politics is racial. It's not ideological. Within a certain race or within a certain group, you can have ideological divisions, and that makes sense that they disagree with each other like the Jews do about what's best for themselves. But the minute you extend, as these Western, the Western philosophy has done, as soon as you extend the society to the include many communities, well, now it's not about ideological divide anymore. It's about one community versus another community, one group against another. And in the current zeitgeist, in the current political system that we have and have had for at least 70 years, it's white people who are supposed to just unilaterally disarm, think of everyone else as themselves, as good or better than themselves, and this has been disastrous for whites. And this current trend in the discourse right now of current events of Trump is calling attention to this. Now, Trump harkens back and reminds me of two previous politicians that have betrayed their people. After sounding good, they've actually revealed themselves as traitors. And that one is Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher. And there's many examples. Ronald Reagan at the same time did pretty much the same thing. But Thatcher, in order to get elected in Britain back in the 80s, was made some noises that she was going to, that she recognized the interests of native Britons that didn't want to be swamped by alien cultures. And that was enough. That dog whistle was enough to propel her into office. But once in office, she didn't slow down the immigration. She sped it up. And that has been a recurring pattern all along in, or at least since World War II, in European and European diaspora politics. The leaders really behind the scenes are looking to their true constituency, which is dominated by Jews, the wealthy people. The democracy is really just a sham. It's a fraud. And it's what's the way things really work is by plutocracy. It's the rule by the rich, the people who own the or have enough money to donate or basically pour into politics in order to influence the politicians, in order to buy the politicians. And even if they don't directly buy the politicians, they are able to influence public thinking through their control of media. And this is totally dominated by Jews, certainly in Britain and most other countries in Europe, and definitely in the United States. It's Jews working as a group to advance Jewish interests, and what the Jews want is what drives the agenda. And if they don't like something, then it is destroyed. It's dismantled and destroyed. So this is what this is why things happen the way they happen. Schwarzenegger is another good example of this. Arnold Schwarzenegger in California, I remember because I was living there at the time, and I was concerned about immigration and the fact that I could, with my own eyes, I could see that California was turning into Mexico. And Arnold Schwarzenegger came to power mainly because he sent some dog whistles that he was going to fix this problem. I think the number one issue was that the previous governor, Gray Davis, had laid down plans to give illegal aliens driver's licenses. And this is one of those immigration issues and battles that's been fought over the last 30, 40 years now, is this slow incremental increase in benefits to these invaders and treating them more and more as if they're citizens of the country. And people didn't want that to happen. You know, they had already voted previously on Prop 187 in California to cut off any sort of benefits to illegal aliens. That was gutted by the Supreme Court of California and Gray Davis, the combination of the two. And Schwarzenegger came into office, was elected, because the white people in California heard what he had to say, and the similarity to Trump in Schwarzenegger's case was, I'm wealthy and famous, and I don't answer to anybody else, so I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. And it didn't happen, of course. Once Schwarzenegger got into office, he wrecked the state. Simply, I mean, he didn't have to do anything. That's kind of the point. If you don't fight back against the left or the Jewish agenda, the open border agenda, it will just happen. So you have to actively try to defend your borders and actively cut off benefits to that are being used by the invaders in order to stop an invasion. You can't stop an invasion by just saying, we're going to build a wall. And that's part of the false and really mendacious rhetoric coming from Trump, is this idea that, a couple of ideas from Trump. We're going to build a wall, and actually we're going to have Mexico pay for it, but we're going to build a wall, and we're going to deport them all. This is just common sense stuff, and this is why he's so popular. This is what the majority of people in the United States would like, or any country, really. They want their country to be defended because they think of it, or like to think of it, as their own, and that they don't want to see it basically invaded by complete alien people that have nothing in common with them and who are basically just going to take what they have. And so, you know, Trump's rhetoric about building a wall and deporting them all appeals to not just white people. It appeals to all the blacks who are already here and all the Mexicans who are already here and all the everybody else who's already here. If they have any sense and they believe Trump, then that's why they support Trump and supposedly support him in larger numbers than any white Republican candidate has ever enjoyed, or at least enjoyed over recent cycles. But it's a fraud, really, and Trump himself reveals it as a fraud. What's going to be coming, the Thatcher or Schwarzenegger bait and switch or fraud that he's planning, when he says, after I build the wall, it's going to have a big, fat, beautiful, open door. And that's what's going to happen. If the wall ever gets built, I mean, he may come into office and say, well, you know, since we're going to build this big, fat, beautiful open door anyway, why even build the wall or the door or even go through the trouble of deporting them all? Let's just make them all citizens. And harkening back to Reagan, Reagan's argument was, we need to do the right thing morally. And remember, the morals are dictated by the Jews. We've got to treat the other, the minority, as better than us. We've got to treat them right, which is what that means, is treat them better than us. And so we've got to let them all stay and make them citizens, just like us, only better. And that's where we're heading with Trump. That's what Trump will do once he's in office. And the interesting thing about that is that even the Jews, the bulk of the Jews are not fooled by Trump's supposed philo-Semitism, his love for the Jews, the fact that his daughter has married a Jew and converted to Judaism, if that was even possible, or the fact that he's up to his eyeballs in business with Jews and surrounded by his own Jews that support him. The bulk of the Jews are against him, and the bulk of the Jews media is against him. And what's really interesting is that the right side of politics, the conservative, right-wing Republican side, is dominated by Jews too, probably even more so than the left, even though there's less obvious Jews pulling the strings. You've got the bag men, the money men, Sheldon Adelsons and Paul Singers and so forth, that they know that is their true constituency, who they really get their marching orders from, who they have to be selected by before they can possibly be elected. The election being basically just the rubber stamp on it. And despite the fact that Donald Trump has prostrated himself before the Jews and said how what a great ally the Jews are and what a great ally he'd be to the Jews, just like every other politician, whoever gets to that level at this point, the Jews still don't like him. And in fact, they despise him, and they despise him because of all the white people that support him. This is back to the Tea Party phenomena that we've seen over the last two election cycles in 2008 and 2012. The Jews media just hates white people so much. It hates them even when they're unconsciously white, when they just organize as a group without even thinking about, and in fact, while trying hard not to think, you know, denying that they're organizing racially. I'm not a racist, and they put blacks up on stage and applaud them because they're black, because they want to demonstrate how non-racist they are, but they can't help but see that the things that they want are not happening, and so they organize as, for instance, or loosely organize as the Tea Party. And in this cycle, the Tea Party has been co-opted mostly. The kind of issues that they are interested in are co-opted by Trump, and they support Trump, I think, for the most part, the same sort of people that think of themselves as Tea Partiers. And it's mostly white, and that's why the Jews media hates it. The Jews media's code word for that kind of white person is populist, or populism. Donald Trump being the populist, the evil populist, and the appeal that he has to a large number of white people is called populism, and populism is a bad thing that you shouldn't want, even though, you know, democracy is all about trying to, supposedly, trying to get popular support. The whole idea that evidence that that's a fraud is in this idea that's shared by both sides, the left and the right, the elite amongst them, the supposed leaders, the big brains, is that populism is bad, evil, stupid, crazy. And it's not really, populism is another one of those words like racism, that it's really white populism that's bad. Because the whole idea is that the Republican Party should be trying to be more popular with blacks or Latinos or whoever. They bend over backwards, and probably the core principle of the Republican Party, the one thing that they will not abandon, the one point of their ideology that they will not abandon, is absolute slavitude to the Jews and to Israel, to the point of saying things about Israel and how much they love Israel and how much they would defend Israel that they would never say about America, even as a nation of immigrants, or even as a proposition nation, not even as a people, but because it would be racist to say such things about in defense of America, the concept. Never mind white people. And that's the reality of it, is that Trump doesn't explicitly identify himself as white. He doesn't, you know, he's not a racist. He doesn't go to too much trouble to deny that he's a racist, but he just demonstrates that he is. And somebody, I think it might have been Rush Limbaugh, made that point about Trump, that the reason the Jews media propaganda against him about how, you know, white nationalists support him and these stupid, crazy, and evil Trump and proletariat, that this hostile attack hasn't damaged Trump, is because most people are familiar with Trump already, and they're familiar with his celebrity and his show, Celebrity Apprentice, where he demonstrates for all to see that he's not a racist, that he treats people pretty much as people rather than as different races. So, and I think that that's what blacks and the browns and others who support Trump are picking up on too. They can see he's not a white supremacist, that he's not actually going to make America great again by making it white again. So there's that. One other thing about this immigration in the U.S. that Trump has brought to the forefront, at least of people's of the political discourse, is it should make people think, well, who opened our borders in the first place? And who wants them to stay open now? It's really that aspect of it, that exposure that he's providing is good, because it's making people wonder about things, or at least the ones that are capable of thinking independently and logically about such things. And it's clear it's Jews that opened the borders in the first place, and it's Jews, for the most part, that are dictating that they have to stay open, as I've pointed out, that the moral narrative behind almost every rationale arguing in favor of the aliens is based on Jews as the first prototypical, archetypical aliens. And that you see it even when they make reference to the Holocaust or the 6 million or the, you know, cattle cars and gas chambers and all the rest of it, that that's what's looms in every mind that is arguing in favor of the immigrants, even if they don't explicitly say it. It's the Jews, and that we have to do this because Jews. Now, part of this flurry of activity in political discourse and the dramatic change is the rise of these terms cuckservative and the related term kikeservative, which calls attention to this whole situation that I've been talking about, the fact that the Republican right side of politics is now just as treasonous and as poisonous and anti-white as the left side has been for a long time. The left being the source of the original identity politics, and the Democrat in the United States, the Democratic Party being the party of the blacks and the browns and the non-whites, funded and controlled by Jews, and that the right side has become the white party. And for the last two election cycles, 2008 and 2012, that's been the accusation thrown by the left, is that you evil people on the other side are becoming the white party. You are the white party, and that's a bad thing. You know, you shouldn't do that. You should try and appeal. You should try and be more populist toward the blacks and the browns and everybody else. And they have become slavishly interested in serving the interests of Jews for real. I mean, they pay lip service to the idea of trying to win black and brown voters, but who they're really interested in winning the support of is the Jews, and that's pretty obvious. There's a recent article that just came out in New York Magazine that I'll put in the program post that really lays out just how slavish the right side of American politics has become to Jewish interests and Jewish money, Jewish media. And the cuckservative word I talked about in my last podcast is like Trump, is good, and it has its good and its bad sides. You know, it implicitly calls attention to this poisonous relationship where a group of people, white people, are being betrayed and having their resources exploited by another group of people. That's what cuckoldry is all about. It's having your resources stolen by a competing and separate, distinct biological entity that has its own interests in mind. And so cuckservative implicitly calls attention to that. The problem is that cuckservative, and a lot of people throwing around the word cuckservative, don't actually want to call attention to anyone else. They just want to maybe have the Republican Party be a little bit more conservative or a little bit more serve their interests. But they don't want to be called racist, and they don't want to be a Nazi, they don't want to talk about the Jews, they don't want to think about the Jews, and so they use the word cuckoldry more, or cuckservative, more as just an insult to say you're a wimp. It's sort of like calling somebody gay, but it's politically correct, or it used to be politically correct until, of course, the response to cuckservative has been, that's racist, because it's white people using the word. And white people who are concerned about their interests, even if only implicitly. So that's what racism is, and that's what they call it in order to fight back against it. But the reality behind cuckservativism and cuckservatives is that they're kikeservatives. They're either literally Jews who are masquerading as white, or they're whites who have who at the same time they're denying that they're racist, are vicarious racists in that they support Jews to the hilt, as if they are Jews, as if you could imagine that their minds have basically been dedicated in their hearts to Jews and their love for Israel and love for the Jewish people and jumping to defend the Jews from anti-Semitism, which is any criticism of Jews as Jews. It's really bizarre that they, but understandable why. It's because the Jews rule, and they realize that rule at some level in their brain, and they kiss up to that rule, and that's what's going on. They realize that they can enrich themselves personally by denying that they're racists, by denying that they have any interest in whites as a group, even though they're white, and that instead they're going to stand with the Jews, they're going to stand with Israel, and be what, you know, objective thinking white people should recognize is racist also, if you're thinking of racism as an objective thing. You know, the Jews doing basically what whites are not allowed to do, or what whites are called stupid, crazy, and evil for doing. When Jews do it, it's just considered normal and natural. I mean, that's what people have to do to defend their interests and to continue as a people. But these are, you know, these are things that I've talked about long ago, and sort of elementary issues of identity. That, of course, you can look at the Jews and see what they're doing and see that's what's essential to survive. Even their attacks on whites to keep whites defenseless and disorganized is in their interest. And that's why they do it, because it's in their interest, not because it's in everybody's interest, as they often describe it, but because it's in their interest specifically. And that's why they have opened the borders of all the countries that they live in, other than Israel. Israel is theirs for real. That's sort of their nesting ground, and that's where that's their bolt hole, where they can always retreat to if they ever need to. But the rest of these countries on the planet are, even though they're owned by Jews, are for the most part populated by people who aren't Jews, who are a resource to be exploited by them. And that's the fundamentally illegitimate nature of Jew rule in all of these other countries, is that they rule for their benefit, and that includes opening the borders so that these host societies that they rule over can become even larger, can become bloated, and generate even more wealth to be siphoned off and shipped to their true, where their heart and brains and loyalties really lie, their nesting ground, their boat hole, back in Israel. And that's Western politics in a nutshell. And there is some pushback against it, things that they complain about, things like the boycott divestiture movement. BDS, it's called, in the United States and other Western countries, I guess to a lesser extent, on campuses, where the anti-racist rhetoric clashes with the pro-Jew rhetoric. That's what's basically going on, is, you know, the Jews have constructed this anti-racist ideology and philosophy, this idea that white people have to just give things to non-white people, and it squirts out as a blowback to a certain extent against Jews because of the fact that many people see the Jews as white. The Jews encourage this misunderstanding themselves. In fact, I would call that the fundamental fraud of Western politics, is the idea that Jews are white. And it's doublethink, really. You can find many examples of Jews explicitly saying that they're not white and don't think of themselves as white, but even more important, you can see through their actions that they don't consider themselves white, that they don't sympathize with white people. In fact, they see white people as their main enemy. And you see it in the phrase, you know, combating racism and anti-Semitism. Well, as we've already discussed, racism is whites acting like whites in the interest of whites. So they see that as being necessary to combat, and they link it together with anti-Semitism, which combating anti-Semitism just means advancing Jewish interests, defending the Jews from any criticism or any sort of pushback, any sort of anti-parasitism that the host societies might even unthinkingly mount against Jewish interests. You might think, as many objective thinking white identity whites who finally sort of get it and realize, well, you know, everybody else has an identity. I should have an identity too. And they think about it inevitably in our European way, in objective terms. They think, well, everybody should have an identity, sort of the way that David Duke argues. All people have a right to have a homeland and preserve their culture. And the reality is that, and some of these people will say, you know, like, well, Jews should have their Israel so that they can have their culture. But they won't go as far as to say, usually, Jews should be kicked out of my country because they're destroying it and they're destroying my people. But they will think and argue that, hey, well, my people should have a country too. And they don't often make the next logical step, which is, well, what's the biggest threat to my culture and my people? Who is constantly attacking my people, saying that they don't even exist? Well, it's Jews doing that. It's Jews behind this anti-racist, open borders thing. Those are Jewish constructs. It's mainly Jews who have done those things. So the fundamental fraud of Western politics, and that's probably the main point that I have to get across in this podcast, is that Jews are white. This idea that Jews are white. And they look white, and biologically they're closely related to white people genetically, like in the sense that they're more closely genetically related to whites than, say, Africans are, or even full-blown Eastern Asians. But they are from the periphery of Europe originally, and they have lived amongst Europeans, even though they have lived amongst Europeans for 2,000 years, they've and interbred to a certain extent with Europeans. They are still also fairly inbred and insular and themselves as a people. That's their main concern. I've talked, I think it was especially with my conversation with Kyle Hunt a few months ago, about one of the things that confuses people. They look at Jews and they see that there's black Jews and there's yellow Jews and there's Jews in India and there's Jews in South America. There's Jews everywhere. And they look different. And so they think Jews can't be a race. And what they're missing is that there's two halves to the Jews. There's the core, the genetic pool of pure Jews, and that core is mainly insulated from any sort of encroachment from the genes from outside. And yet, and I'm thinking now of mainly the Orthodox Jews, the ones who have a sense of race to a religious level, that are so insular and keep to themselves and only let their children, they teach their children that, you know, they should only marry other Jews, and that's for the most part what their children actually do, and they have lots and lots of babies. And so you can think of this as a constant pool that's spewing Jews out into the society around it, and that's where the other half of the Jews are, is in the, some of the Jews splash out into the host around them and digest that host, spew enzymes into its brain and take control of its finances and its media and convince it that Jews are just like them. You know, it's not just that Jews pretend to be white, but in India, Jews are Indians, just like any other Indian. And in China, Jews are Chinese, just like any Chinese. This is something that is fundamental to how the Jews do what they do. And it's not just white people that they do it to. White people are, for the most part, unaware of it, and even the white people who become aware of it are mostly aware only of how the Jews operate in white societies. But this mechanism that they exploit, this psychological trick, and this parasitism, these parasitic techniques that they use, are actually the key to how they infiltrate any society, how they've infiltrated non-European, non-white societies in prehistory, and how they're doing it today, even in places like India and China. Now, another interesting thing that happened, I think it's more than a month ago now, was David Duke appeared on Alex Jones to debate him, and Alex Jones wanted to interview him and debate him. And the key thing that happened there, I think, was that when Alex Jones blurted out, "Jews, Jews, Jews, my head hurts," and because that's, I think, in a nutshell, what people like Alex Jones, what's going on in their head. They don't want to think about the Jews, even though the Jews are in the headlines every day. Holocaust, Nazis, the 6 million, swastikas, hate hoaxes. It's every day. There's just this constant drumbeat of, we got to bomb Iran, because the safety of America, the safety of Europe hangs in the balance. We got to let all these aliens in because Jews. The Jews are there constantly manipulating our politics and to their benefit, organized as Jews. And yet, here's the double think from people like Alex Jones. We're not supposed to think about them because that makes our head hurt. It's because we know we'll be called racist or anti-Semite. And Alex Jones makes it pretty plain. He doesn't want to be called a racist. And he definitely doesn't want to be a Nazi. So that's why he tries to generalize. And to a certain extent, he transfers the blame away from the Jews then to these generic arguments that he comes up with, these bizarre Illuminati Nazi conspiracy. It's not the Jews who run the world in his telling. It's the Nazis or people who collaborated with the Nazis, and they want to kill everybody. And that was the common ground, I think, that David Duke had with Alex Jones, is Alex Jones is trying to explain the same sorts of things that are going on in the world and in politics that David Duke tries to explain, except David Duke actually includes the Jews. He sees that the Jews are at the center of it all. And I think even Alex Jones does too, but Alex Jones has set himself up to basically as an apologist for the Jews, as somebody who's coming up with alternative explanations for why things are happening. And that interview debate was entertaining, but it was also pretty typical of the kind of debate that anyone who is Jew-aware and who's trying to wake up their fellow white Americans or fellow white people around them to the menace, really, that Jews are posing and have posed for thousands of years. This is the kind of debate that they have. The other, their friend or their relative, will be like Alex Jones and say exactly the kind of things that Alex Jones says, you know, like, well, it's not all Jews, and because there's one or two non-Jews involved, or even a whole bunch of non-Jews involved, it can't possibly be the Jews. And so we have to come up with other explanations. And it's an argument I've had many, many times with different people. And in the end, it's really, you can see that the person on the other side of the argument is really in denial. I hate to use a Jewish psychoanalytic term for it, but it causes pain in their head to think about the Jews, that this is all a lie, that what the Jews' narrative about their history amongst Europeans for the last 2,000 years and their history generally is that they are victims, innocent victims who have been oppressed and persecuted for no reason whatsoever. And it's so easy to just flip that on its head and say, hey, wait a minute. It's actually the Jews who have been inserting themselves into European society for the last 2,000 years, insisting on being amongst Europeans and exploiting them. And then when the Europeans react to that and expel them from the country or kill a few of them or say mean things about them, then the Jews act like that's the start of it all, that it wasn't what the Jews were doing that had anything to do with it. And all you have to do is realize that flip it like that. It's like one of those drawings where you can see it in one of two ways. Most people see it in terms that the Jews describe it from the Jewish point of view, seeing the Jews as the victims of everything that's going on. And I'd say that's pretty close to the reality. They're looking at the same facts and pointing to the same facts. But you just need to flip it in your mind and realize that it's actually the cover story that the Jews use. They see it entirely from their point of view, and they refuse basically to acknowledge that anyone else has any right to exist. We all exist for the benefit of the Jews in the Jews' mind. And what's so poisonous and really sick about the way our current society is organized and is going is that many, many white people have adopted that way of seeing things as well and will spew this Jewish narrative to explain what's going on. And it's all, you know, this is where the double thing comes in. It's, you know, the ideas are Jews are white, but they're special, just like everybody else. You know, we're supposed to entertain both ideas in our head at the same time. We're supposed to treat Jews just like everybody else, and they'll use that argument sometimes. Except when they want special treatment, they want to be treated, they want to be given special funds for their country or for their defense, or they want to be given special consideration under the law, or they want to be given special access to whatever they want access to that's good for them, then they need to be treated as a special group of people who can't be criticized, and should hate laws have to be crafted to defend them specifically. So there's a point I missed making during the political argument, but I guess I'll just put it in here at the end. And that is, and it kind of goes in hand with this, Jews, my head hurts, you know, where you have to basically ignore the fact that the Jews are the ones talking about the Jews in the Jews media constantly. And one of the sort of complementary reflections of that is that what's in the media all the time? White privilege, white nationalism, white identity politics, and always in a negative context, always with the idea that white is bad. And this is also part of the fundamental fraud of Western politics, is it's right in front of you that whites and Jews are distinct, and in fact 180 degrees different, because at the same time the Jews media is telling you all this negative stuff about white privilege and white supremacy is another one, white nationalism, white identity politics, and how bad that is, they're treating Jewish privilege and Jewish nationalism, Zionism, Jewish identity politics as good, as unquestionable. And so that exists at the same time with this idea that Jews are white, just like us, except they can have their nationalism and their privilege and their identity politics, and if you question them for it, well, you're a racism. That's the, you know, racism. Combating racism and anti-Semitism is basically bashing white people and then defending Jews from any sort of bashing at all. They can't be criticized. So on the left-hand side of the political spectrum, we have lots and lots of rhetoric against white supremacy, which, according to the left and the identity politics, the non-white crowd, you know, this country is still ruled by a mindset of white supremacy. And the evidence of that is Hollywood and Wall Street and the white presidents that we've had, you know, forever. And that the fact that there are still white people walking around. This is all evidence of white supremacy, according to the left. And on the right, what we've seen with the rise of Trump and the attacks on him and the people who are excited by Trump is condemnations of white power, which is really just the same thing as white supremacy. It's this, it's maybe even worse, the criticism of white power, because it's coming from the right side, which is supposedly, you know, the party of white people, according to the left, you know, the party that is secretly racist and pro-white. It's actually the right elite that is criticizing this white power. So at the same time, on the left, they call it different things. White supremacy is the bugbear, the bugaboo, the boogeyman. And on the right, it's white power and white identity politics, which is a no-no. You're not supposed to think of yourself even in terms of being white unless it's as something bad, something to feel guilty about, something to pay penance for. So that's it. I'll talk again the next time. I don't know when that'll be. I'm not really on track to do regular podcasts anymore, or even regular posts, as I discussed at the beginning, but I'll see you when I see you.